On this podcast, you'll find interviews with high-performing, successful individuals in life sciences. On a weekly basis, we cover their proven methods, principles, strategies, and mindsets to implement new technologies that scale to meet the needs of people in our world.
Welcome to this episode of Life Science Success. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Don, and I'm a consultant in life sciences. I help companies streamline broken processes and take out inefficiencies so that the revenue that they have is more profitable. I work across life sciences and pharmaceuticals, medical device and IVD, and also biotech. The types of things that I typically work on are things like mapping inefficiencies, planning and facilitating improvement events, and project management. Also, any sort of technology adjustments as well. Let's hop from talking about me to today's guest. In this episode of Life Science Success, we're thrilled to welcome back Elizabeth Smalley as our guest. Elizabeth is the VP of Product Management, Data and Analytics at Aeris Global, where she plays a pivotal role in steering the company's strategic initiatives in the realms of artificial intelligence and machine learning within the life sciences sector. So welcome back.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being here. And so we were talking a little bit about the weather before we got started here. Today's a snowy day in Colorado. We just are getting brand new snow coming over the mountains, and I'm looking forward to the season. The season's changing back to spring again. It would be so good to have warmer weather. But you're experiencing a little bit more of that as well.
Yeah, it feels like it's springtime here in Maine. We didn't get a lot of snow this winter, so everybody's ready for the warmer weather. There's not going to be snow, and we can skip winter.
Yeah, very good. So Elizabeth, there are probably a lot of people that might not have seen our first episode. Would you mind just sort of talking a little bit about your career? I was talking at the very beginning, whenever we first were connecting, your title's changed actually quite a bit since the last time that we talked. And so maybe talk a little bit about your journey, what led you to Aeris, and then also what is it that you started as at Aeris, and then what are you doing now?
Sure. So I have had a long career in product management, doing everything from e-commerce to manufacturing to health tech. And throughout that whole career, AI has always really been central to the initiatives that I've worked on and that I've brought to life. Before joining Aeris, I worked with Teladoc Health on their chronic care team. And what our team did during my time there is we brought their Healthy Heart Management program to life. This is remote patient monitoring paired with a patient-facing application, paired with AI-driven clinical algorithms to help detect worsening heart failure and ultimately improve health outcomes for those who are living with heart failure. And I always think about that experience as we work in life sciences, because this is AI in a clinical setting. So it's really important we get it right. It's software as a medical device regulated by the FDA, and we were able to bring that to market really breathtakingly quick. And I always harken back to that experience, because when we talk about AI in life sciences, sometimes it takes a little bit longer for that adoption. And I feel like we could probably take a page from that software as a medical device playbook to help accelerate this adoption. But from there, I joined Aeris Global to work on their signal detection and analytics suite in their most exciting, their most exciting products around cognitive computing. And I expanded to take care of all of their data and analytics and AI capacities. And that's where I am today.
Oh, very good. Thank you for sharing that. And then just as well, let's talk a little bit about Aeris Global and what it is that they do. What specifically do they focus on, and what do they bring to market as well?
Yeah, so Aeris Global provides a platform for life sciences in the pharmacovigilance and regulatory domains. Full end-to-end platform, but something you can also adopt in a modular way as well. And what really differentiates Aeris Global is their innovation. Aeris Global was the first to introduce AI into the case processing workflow, and it's been wildly successful. And from where I sit, we are the ones who are really helping to accelerate now the adoption of generative AI in life sciences as well. So that's always been, you know, the differentiator for Aeris Global is that innovation and that thought leadership.
Okay, very good. And so in terms of the initiative that you started now with having the Gen AI Council, what role does Aeris play within this new frontier?
Yeah, I mean, so generative AI, according to McKinsey, is poised to bring $110 billion annual economic value to life sciences. But of course, it's not as easy as, you know, picking the apple off the tree. We have a lot of regulations we need to think about. And everyone's talking about the EU AI Act and how we make sure that we're staying on the right side of that. And then at the same time, this generative AI and these foundation models, the technology feels very new to us. It's not new, but it feels very new to us. It's now general purpose, easy to get at, low barriers to entry. And then the working model is very different. This idea of having a foundation model provided by OpenAI, trained on data I never saw, and I'm going to implement that in my product. How does that all work with accountability and transparency? These are the questions that the industry needs to grapple with. And there's not a playbook. So what we need to do is we need to create that playbook in order to really accelerate the adoption of this generative AI. And the only way to do that is collaboratively. So our thought has been, let's bring together the key minds in the industry who can help start to accelerate this. So that is industry players, but it's also academia, it's also other technology providers, and we're just in this space now where collaboration is going to be how we accelerate this.
Yeah, and whenever I sort of think about the collectives that we have in the industry, I mean, there are several, you know, councils and consortiums and a lot of different ways to, you know, sort of gather the hearts and minds in terms of, you know, critical topics. This one definitely seems to me like it will be important, because the last thing you want is uninformed individuals that are outside of our industry sort of setting the boundaries of the way that the industry should work. And I think it is a real opportunity in that way. How do you sort of think about this and aim to revolutionize the use of AI and machine learning in life sciences?
So for me personally, again, I go back to that software as a medical device experience and how quickly we're able to bring this out in a safe and effective way in a clinical setting, which feels very, I mean, it's very high stakes, right? You're dealing directly with the patient and you'd better be getting it right. And I'm so glad that the EU AI Act has come on the scene, because really what it does is it codifies responsible AI. There's nothing in that act that is startling to those of us who have worked in AI for a long time, right? What are they asking for? They're asking for transparency. They're asking for explainability. They're asking for an explanation of the training data. And these are all tenets of responsible AI, right? So now it's codified, and now there's penalties if you don't adhere to this. And I think it's one of the best things to hit the scene. And what it's gonna do for us as we work through sort of the fear and uncertainty around it, what it's really going to do for us is bolster our frameworks and give us the confidence to move with speed. So that's, and you've heard other players say, I'm sure, that, hey, we need the regulators to catch up. We need the regulators to catch up. EU's leading the way. And that's going to allow us very, very quickly to implement and adopt this technology.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thought as well. I mean, I've seen EU, well, countries in the EU swing the pendulum the other way, right? So they, I mean, initially they had like completely blocked out ChatGPT in places like Italy and things like that. And I mean, there were people that were there throwing a fit that, you know, hey, look, we don't have access to this thing. Then they found kind of a go around with OpenAI. So they were able to sort of get to the back end, you know, not necessarily the front end that all of us, the pretty front end that all of us get to experience. And so I've seen sort of the maturation, I guess you could say, of their thought process as well. Do you think that in terms of the things that, let's say, Aeris Global will provide in terms of, you know, generative AI, do you think that any of this sort of also uncovers some of the secret sauce, I guess, in terms of the things that you will develop, you know, as well? Or do you think that it's still okay? Because I think that at least the comments that I heard initially from a lot of companies that had, you know, AI models and ways that they were doing things, they wanted to keep it somewhat secret because they didn't want to give up how exactly they did the thing that they did to make it easier for their competitors.
I mean, I don't think what the EU is asking for really gives up too many secrets. You know, they're asking for an explanation of training data. They're asking for explainability. And again, these are tenets of responsible AI. Now, explainability, let's maybe double click on that one. One of the best examples of explainability in America is your credit score, right? Your credit score is driven by an AI algorithm. And if you apply for credit and you're denied credit, you get a letter saying you're denied credit because you don't have enough open accounts or because you have late payments. That's the explainability. Now, I've not told you exactly how the model works. I've not given away any secrets, but I've explained to you why this decision was made, what the model looked at. And we've done such a good job at this that every American knows now what affects your credit score, right? Mm. And so that, I think, is one of the gold standards that we should be casting our eyes towards. How do we make models and make them so explainable that the average person, the average consumer, understands it from the age of 16? We teach this stuff in schools now, right? Of how your credit score works. So I don't think that's giving away the secret sauce.
Yeah, and I think that I think it's important to say that as well, right? I mean, I think I just think it's really important that we sort of answer that question up front. That the whole idea behind this isn't to give exactly how things work inside of your your software, your capability in AI. Right. It's more or less to uncover, you know, exactly how the decision was made. Yes. You know, at a very base level. So you mentioned patient-centric focused as a core objective. Mm-hmm. How will the council's work directly benefit patients? And what are some of the examples that generative AI really is going to help in terms of helping to enhance healthcare outcomes?
So in the realm of pharmacovigilance, one of the biggest use cases where generative AI can really have an impact on patients is in the signal detection space. So a very attractive use case is, you know, safety signal profiling with generative AI. And I think about this a little bit as a co-pilot in the signal validation process, where that AI is helping you navigate the data in a very quick way and, you know, able to elicit insights that as a human, you're not going to see right away. And even our classical discriminative AI isn't necessarily going to elicit right away for you because there's that contextual understanding that these deep learning models can give us. And what does that mean for patients? That means finding signals faster and having, protecting patient safety first and foremost, right? The quicker we find these signals, the fewer adverse events happen in a given population. So I think that's one area, especially in the safety realm, that can help benefit patients. On the flip side, if you go to the other side of the process into drug development, we know that these technologies are already being used in drug development and have the capacity to accelerate that, right? What does that mean? Quicker medications, faster solutions to medical problems, but also, importantly, cheaper. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't take me 10 years to bring something to market, then I'm going to be able to offer it to you cheaper in a more affordable way. And that has huge consequences, good consequences for our society as a whole.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect lead-in really to my next question, which is really more more focused on regulatory compliance as well. As I sort of think about this, I feel as if, and I've described it, I just did this last night as well, right? I'm not somebody who goes typically to regulators, and in my daily life sciences walk, you know, I'm not somebody typically who, you know, sits with the regulators and works out exactly how these things work. What I have seen up till now, though, is that people are developing faster and better processes in the upfront piece. And then on the back end, the regulators are still doing the same thing that they did, you know, decades ago. I mean, I guess, how does the Generative AI Council plan to tackle some of these regulatory challenges associated with implementing AI? But also, do you see in the future that maybe there's a future benefit, I guess, to where the way that regulators look at things that have come through and had, you know, generative AI take a look at it as well?
So what we see regulators doing, which I think is the right thing, is trying to create holistic AI policies. So generally, you know, we get hung up a little bit on generative AI because it's the newest thing, but it's still just AI. And your listeners may know that it's not new, right? So when you're on your cell phone and you're typing something in and it predicts the next word, that's actually generative AI. You've been using it for decades, right? What's new is that companies like OpenAI have created these massive models that are so good at predicting things, so good at predicting that next word, that they can generate whole paragraphs based on that prediction, or whole books, or whole submissions based on that prediction. So this isn't new. And I think regulators are doing an admirable job of trying to wrap it in to current AI policies and think of it holistically. And I think it'll be key for all of us to really think about AI systems and not AI models, right? I don't want to think too much about OpenAI's ChatGPT. I may use it as a component in my system. And what I want to assess is that full end-to-end system. So keeping that end-to-end system in mind and then developing frameworks that we can think of holistically is what the council is aiming at doing to help with this process. And I think when you have industry leading a little bit here and you're pressure testing those frameworks against real use cases that we want to bring to life, regulators are going to lean in and help us with that journey as well. So it's a little bit of a pull and push. And I think we'll develop together in that way.
Yeah, I think that the one of the things that might help at least me in terms of understanding, you know, what the Generative AI Council with Aeris Global will be focusing on is, you know, what are some of those use cases that you could see that the council is exploring in life sciences for research and development?
Yeah, so one of our objectives, because the mission, maybe we should start there, is to accelerate the adoption of generative AI in life sciences for enhanced outcomes, while making sure we steadfastly maintain patient centricity, regulatory compliance. And one of our objectives in doing that is to make sure that we're continuously exploring and assessing these use cases and promoting the ones that can really drive value. So a few of the use cases that we've talked about in council and in some cases outside of council include dynamic data extraction, which is a broad capability that you can use for all kinds of things, and safety narrative generation, which is also a use case that Gartner pinpointed in their report for life sciences, which is kind of interesting that an outside analyst pinpointed that use case as well. These are essentially efficiency use cases, right? Efficiency use cases that can save a tremendous amount of time. But the next frontier, really, you can use AI for efficiencies, for insights, or for decisions. And as you move along that spectrum, you have a greater responsibility to responsible AI, but generative AI is going to quickly move into the insight and decision-making realm as well.
Yeah, and it is one of those things where I could see it sort of accelerating an awful lot of different capabilities inside of the industry. What is the sort of group of individuals for this council look like? How did you select them? What does the membership look like?
Yeah, so this was an invite only process, and we looked for a spectrum of backgrounds, right? So we want to have a representation from people deep in industry, but also technology providers, not just Aris Global, but providers of foundation models in particular, and academia, because there's still a lot of research happening in this area. Can AI complete theory of mind tasks? That's something academia is helping answer for us. And so what the diverse background was important, but then also movers and shakers, I would say, industry leaders who are already within their organizations looking to embrace this technology and ready to help us promote the adoption of generative AI. Some of the council members that we spoke to, that we worked with, have, you know, hundreds of use cases for generative AI in their organizations that they're assessing. There's a real push from industry to adopt this technology and realize some of that $110 billion in economic value.
Yeah, and I think that having those different perspectives have just really got to be, something that's enabling. But also, what are some of the, the ways that you're seeing the collaboration come together, and how do you ensure that the council's initiatives really benefit from that wide range of perspectives?
Yeah, I mean, one thing we did when we rolled out the council, we put in place an expectation of confidentiality so that it's all really closed doors. So we're putting out some reports for people who weren't there to read through, but it's really a closed door council. And that creates, you know, a space where we can talk openly about what's worked well, what's not worked well, what are we thinking about for the future? How are we assessing these things? So a big focus on creating that collaborative workspace. Even though you've got some team members in the room who maybe are competitors, for example, and that's okay. So creating that collaborative workspace. And I think we're also at a really unique place in time where we're all learning together. That's not a place you find yourself much with technology, right? But we're really all learning together. And these models, the foundation models continue to evolve. The regulations continue to evolve. Some of the thinking behind it continues to evolve, and we want to evolve alongside with it. You know, we've been talking about LLMs for the last, 8 months. Every person I talk to says that acronym at some point in the conversation, but we're already on to nimble AI and LMs. Like, hey, maybe everything shouldn't be a large language model. Maybe we need to not embrace general purpose AI. What about these smaller, more targeted, nimble models? We're already talking about those things. So I think we're in that really unique spot where everything's changing so fast that the council members are thankful and glad to be in the room to talk through it. So a little bit of the times and a little bit of how we structured it ensures that the collaboration happens.
Yeah, so it's so important. What are some of the biggest challenges that you're facing, whenever you think about generative AI? And then also, how's the council preparing to address these?
So we still talk a lot about hallucinations. And I think the frameworks help address these in a little bit of education, right? Mm. So some of the things we talk about is hallucinations are not a bug. They're a feature, right? Go and ask ChatGPT to write you a poem. Where do you think that came from, right? So hopefully it's made it up. That's what you've asked it to do. And so these new deep learning models have a capability of mimicking human creativity, not just human analytical capabilities, which is what we're really used to. So when we ask these large language models to do something analytical and it gets creative on us, we say, oh, that's a hallucination. We can't have that. It's a feature. And as a feature, there are implementation patterns that help us suppress that creativity. Don, I don't want you to make up a new drug. I want to talk about real ones, right, that are in the market. And we can tell AI the same thing. We can tell AI, don't make stuff up. We want you to be analytical. We can use retrieval augmented generation patterns to help ring fence the information it's accessing. There are hyperparameters that we can use, temperature settings that we can turn up and down. So hallucinations have been a big concern, but talking through these implementation patterns that we can use and talking through a little education, like, hey, this is not unintended. This is a feature and we can control it, helps with those challenges. And I think hallucinations in particular goes right along with the challenge of trust, where you have to not only address hallucinations because this is the new thing, but again, go back to those age-old principles of responsible AI. How am I ensuring transparency and explainability? That's what gets you the trust.
Yeah. And so critical as well. I mean, I could just envision, right, that you're, you know, trying to develop something that has to be analytical at its base. And all of a sudden that creativity just creeps in where you didn't want it to. And as you know, many of us have seen, you know, AI, you know, sometimes doesn't give us the answers that we want. And so you have to continue to tweak, like, how you're talking to the AI as well, which really leads me to my next question. For our listeners in life sciences, what advice would you give them to navigate the upcoming changes and opportunities presented by generative AI?
So first, you know, I would say we need to think about our language a little bit. So when we talk about generative AI, I often hear people talk about generative AI and LLMs as if they're the same thing. And we know they're not, right? An LLM is a model capable of generative AI, but it's also capable of so much more. And a lot of the hype is really around what the LLM is capable of. So with that distinction, thinking about what is the AI task you're trying to achieve and having a framework around what is the variability that I introduce with that task based on my implementation pattern, what is the impact of that task going wrong, helps us reduce that risk. Now, how are you going to come up with that framework? There's lots of, you know, lots of things out there, like the OECD and the EU AI Act that you can reference. But at the end of the day, there is not a playbook yet, and you're going to have to collaborate. This is collaborating with the person sitting next to you in your organization. This is collaborating with the technologists, this is collaborating with the regulators, this is collaborating with people from other industries to move this forward. And I think that is my number one piece of advice. Collaborate. Reach outside of your circle to help move this forward.
Thank you for that. And then if you think about the future, where do you see this going? What is your hope overall that generative AI and the work that you're doing with the Generative AI Council, what do you really, you know, hope that this turns out to be inside of the global healthcare ecosystem?
So I think, you know, you mentioned the global healthcare ecosystem. So I'll expand a bit beyond Aeris Global's remit. So generative AI has the power to really help streamline clinical workflows and to remove, to help our clinicians work at the top of their license and to remove from their plate things that are not the top of their license, right? And that can mean for you and for I and for any other patients out there that your care team, your doctors and your nurses that you work with have their time freed up to spend it on working directly with you, the patient. That is huge. Generative AI also has the capacity to streamline the claims process. So here in America, you know, with claims and the way insurance works, a lot of times your care team spends all their time, a lot of their time trying to get paid. It's hard. What if that was streamlined for them? What would that mean for you, the patient? Moving into the drug development and the life sciences area, generative AI has the capacity to streamline and really accelerate drug development, but also as we go through that drug development process to bring into it predictive safety analytics. So we can really start to, you know, when you form a clinical trial, you're never going to cover the entire variability of the human genome that you're targeting. You're not going to cover all of the weird things that go wrong outside of clinical trials. But with generative AI, and particularly with these deep learning models like LLM, you can now start to introduce real world evidence with all of your trials and do a much better job of covering that spectrum. What does that mean for you, the patient? That means we can predict now. We have the potential to predict, hey, this particular phenotype won't respond well to this medication. So, dear doctor, don't recommend it for these patients, only for these patients. That's something previously we'd only find out post-market, right? So faster medications, your care team more available to you, and safer medications. Who can't get behind that?
Yeah. And I just think about the, I mean, I'm not a physician, but at the same time, there's all the things that they have to watch, you know, whenever they are providing you care, and having something constantly thinking about, well, did you consider this? And did you consider that? And there's, you know, boundaries, you know, in terms of my care. I also, you know, I've talked to some physicians about AI in the past, and, you know, my sort of open philosophy overall is that if you were the individual that followed checklists and wasn't very empathetic, you know, and didn't have much bedside manner prior to, you know, AI coming along, AI theoretically could take your job. However, if you're somebody who, just like we oftentimes describe, that, you know, the medical care that's given to us is also emboldened by science, and it's not as easily taken over by, you know, a computer and things like that. I mean, these are things that could enable our healthcare, not necessarily limit people's jobs or take them away. And I think, absolutely, I think thinking about it that other way, the contrast of taking my job away, is really, you know, one that could limit our thoughts in terms of where this could go. But the possibilities are so great.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. The nobody got into healthcare to file claims and to work on the patient chart. Most of doctors and nurses, they got into healthcare to help people. That's what they want to do. And this has the capacity to give them more time for that core mission to help people.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Elizabeth Smalley, thank you so much for coming back on the Life Science Success Podcast, and thanks for sharing, you know, what's going on with the Generative AI Council. It sounds to me like a very interesting, thing to have that will better empower, hopefully, the ideas that are coming from Aeris Global, but also other organizations as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to Life Science Success. For complete details about this podcast, including show notes, how to get in touch with guests, and more episodes, please visit www.lifesciencesuccess.com. If there's someone you'd like for us to invite to the show as a guest, please let me know by sending me a message at the podcast website. Please click subscribe on your favorite podcast app, share the podcast, or tell a friend about it, and last but not least, rate the podcast. Thank you again.